We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Anthony Herron, Score football analyst.
I've talked to you about Kyle Fuller in a number of ways. He's better at and specializes in that off-man coverage, but he drives on the route and he anticipates the route. He has a sixth sense for where the receiver's going to end up.
Former NFL defensive lineman and Iowa Hawkeye.
Khalil Mack, he's fast, he's ferocious. When Mack is coming from the backside, then he's a guy who can make a game-changing, game-altering sort of tackle, where if an Anthony Herron is chasing from the backside, all right, you may get tripped up on your ankles, but you're not necessarily as worried about some sort of a strip or takeaway happening.
Co-host of the Score post-game show with Olin Krutz.
I think Matt Nagy knows he needs to win some damn games.
Big Ant Herron with Dan Bernstein on 670 The Score.
Anthony Herron is brought to you by Bet Rivers Sportsbook, Chicago's hometown sportsbook. And Anthony Herron is visible on Twitch, so you should get a look at him because he's the handsome one in this combination. It is twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. He's on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Big Ant, how are you?
What's happening, Daniel?
Well, go ahead.
Well, this morning when I took the t-shirt out of the closet, I wasn't paying attention to which one, but it has occurred to me now that I was looking at myself on the stream that I am wearing a Lucky 13 burger shirt. It's a restaurant out in Salt Lake City. So they don't have them around here, but it did make me curious whether or not you've ever tried peanut butter on a burger before.
No, that's a bridge too far for me.
I thought it was too.
But I get it though. I get the idea of like a Penang curry. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy occasionally a Thai Penang curry with beef, so I get it, but worlds colliding in ways that I
could do
without.
It's a luxury item. It is worth your time. I'd say give it a try, because I was resistant as well, and then they kept asking me to come to Lucky 13. I went and checked it out, and you know what? It worked.
Okay. I will always try something. I tend to be more of a purist when it comes to burgers. I don't experiment much. I know what I like and I know why I like it, but we'll see. I'm looking at this game as a chance for the Bears to really, for the first time, establish the fact that they're good at offense, because this is not the Bucs front seven. This is not the Colts front seven. With all your processes and all of your coming together and all of your growth and everything that takes so much time, It's enough already. It's time to score 30 points because your offense is better than their defense.
That seems fair. I think that's a fair assessment. It's the right way to look at this game after back-to-back contests against squads that you can look at and say, okay, you know what, Matt Nagy coming out of that one, if you're going to tell us the run game was completely stifled to the point where, you know what, even I sort of threw my hands up during the game and said, you know what, coach, it makes sense. Don't even try to run the football because it's just not happening against these dudes. Go ahead with your passing game as run game concept just so you have a shot at moving the rock and putting something on the board. But that's not sustainable, you know, regardless of who the defense is. It is not sustainable unless you are amongst the elite of the elite at quarterback and receiver. You know, if your passing attack is amongst the most special in the game, then all right. But that's obviously not the Bears. That is not where this offense is at right now. So you're going to have balance. And I do legitimately think, Dan, like, think back to, I think it was the day of, like, if did they open against Green Bay on a Thursday night? Were they like the premier game of the season last year? When I was sitting there, we were downstairs at Prudential, And I told you and Connor before that first game that folks, multiple teams in the NFC had told me they'd figured out Matt Nagy and they had figured out this Bears offense and they felt great about stopping it in his second season. And that turned out to be the case.
Yep.
And it took a couple of weeks before folks kind of remembered what I was talking about. Like, yeah, folks figured him out. I will say this, though. Matt Nagy's been better this year. Matt Nagy is scheming receivers open. Like, remember, there was several times I'm literally yelling at you guys in the studio during the last season where receivers weren't separating, where people weren't open. And Mitch was bad, but it was exacerbating how bad Mitch was because people weren't open. And if they were open, they were open by a smidge. By a skosh, and Mitch and the quarterback to get it to the dude who's only open by a skosh. He needs windows. He needs separation. He didn't have that last year. They've had it this season. Not like consistently across the board, but there's been plenty of strike play opportunities. And between 2.5 games of Mitch and now 2.5 games of Nick Foles, they are both sailing the ball over the heads of scot-free receivers and making tight ends like Jimmy Graham and big, bulky receivers like Allen Robinson contort their bodies to make grabs. That doesn't feel sustainable, especially if there's not a ground attack to go with it. So I do think that Matt Nagy has been better in scheming the passing attack. I think as far as scheming the run game, if you think about an offense like the San Francisco 49ers where they scheme the run game at such a high level and Kyle Shanahan calls plays at moments where it feels like the defense isn't expecting them and here's some speedy receiver on the jet sweep or here's a running back running through this gaping hole because the O-line is good, but also they scheme things at a high level. You don't see that in the run game with the Bears, even when they ran so much spread last Thursday night against Tampa. So on occasion, you would think when the defense is spread out from the formations the Bears threw at him, that you would occasionally see a gaping hole. It just wasn't there. So there's a lot of meat on the bone for this offense to play, to call, to execute at a higher level than we've seen.
Anthony Herron is part of the Scores post-game show, and that's going to be on after the post-game show. Just to let you know what we're doing on Sunday, 9 a.m. to noon is the pregame show with Hub and Patrick and Olin, the Bet Rivers pregame show presented by Mail Medical. Then after the game, it's the Prop Swap post-game show presented by PNC Bank with Hub and Patrick Manley. That's going to run for 2 hours, and then that post-post with Anthony and Olin Kreutz, followed by the Raiders at San Francisco that'll be carried live here on The Score. When you talk about scheming guys open and what we've seen from some of the formations, it got to the point last year where the Bears were formationally somewhat predictable. And what I liked how they started the year, and I don't know how much of it this was Trubisky instead of Foles, but using the quarterback under center to get a little different kind of action, to change the play action a little bit, to maybe stop a linebacker's feet, maybe catch a safety peeking a little bit. What have you noticed since the switch? About we've seen the numbers, but what have you noticed formationally as far as predictability with Foles?
I was curious if we would see the Bears go more to like almost an exclusive shotgun look because that's where Nick Foles has been more throughout his career. It's where he's always seemed more comfortable. It's what he did in college, and it's what he's excelled at more so in the NFL than any point he's been asked to be under center. I would say the initial game against the Colts, we saw almost exactly the same offense from the Bears. It did seem in the game last week against Tampa Bay where they went to more gun opportunities, more of Nick Foles behind center as opposed to under center. And, there were some moments that were good. There were some moments not so much. And I do feel like it was because there ended up being a conscious decision that we're just not going to be able to run the football against this crew. So let's get the ball into his hands and he can get it out more quickly, more on the lateral side. And I think there was an adjustment. A couple of things in game that stood out to me against that Tampa Bay defense that I liked that Matt Nagy did. One was, again, it eventually got to the point where I just didn't even question him not running the ball exclusively anymore because they just weren't having any success with it anyway. But formationally, one thing they did was they used the swing pass. You saw them get David Montgomery out of the backfield. You saw them get Cordarrelle Patterson out of the backfield and take advantage of some of those matchups against a fast-flowing defense. They did a lot of that out of shotgun last week. And also in the red zone, towards the end of the first half, that opportunity they gave, it was two plays in a row, essentially, where they went a 3-by-1 formation. We got three receivers to one side of the field, and Jimmy Graham was the single receiver on the opposing side. It was two out of the last three plays where they used a very similar formation and a similar route concept. And one of the things I've complained about a lot over the years with Matt Nagy is that he tries so hard to outsmart the opponent from one snap to the next.
Right.
And it can just lead to not taking advantage of matchup opportunities. We've seen him more this season because of seemingly the confidence he has in Jimmy Graham in saying, you know what, I don't care if they see this formation. I don't care if they know exactly what's coming. Let's just give my guy an opportunity to make a play. And they did that at the end of the first half, as they've done a couple of other times. Same formation, similar area of the field. One was from the 20, and they just narrowly threw it out of bounds. The other one was from the 12-yard line. And Jimmy Graham just makes an outstanding one-handed grab one-on-one because they set him up for that versus the formation. So that would be another look at, to me, where Matt Nagy has improved this season. And these things are happening out of the shotgun. I don't think it necessarily benefits the Bears' offensive line in the run game to go more and more shotgun. So I hope, for the sake of the rest of the offense, not necessarily just the Nick Foles comfort in the passing attack, but within the run phase of the Bears offense, they do benefit from having some under center still be a big part of it. And I think we'll still see it.
That has been my working theory. Now that we have a large sample size of Matt Nagy, what you said about outsmart, and the terminology I use is, every play to him is a puzzle to solve. Every play, it seems to be like, how do I solve the Rubik's Cube right now of this down and distance? What defense are they in? What do I see? And I understand that does sort of cleave to this philosophy of the, you know, the big hitter. And I like that idea. But sometimes you have to look at groups of plays and understand where you are in a game and what your team needs, rather than the spinning the wheel and hitting that magical perfect play. Yeah, right. It's not everything's a puzzle. Sometimes, a couple times, you just got to slam it up in there, or they couldn't get a guy off the field, and you see that he, you got a matchup somewhere, and just keep doing the same thing until they stop it. That's okay too.
And I believe, and we saw some evidence of it in the last game, where, you know, where he and Nick Foles, and Foles is all animated as they're communicating on the sideline. I think there's evidence to the notion that Matt Nagy will continue to, and I think to some extent perhaps already does, trust Nick Foles to recognize those matchups and those opportunities as well. Part of what ended up happening was where Foles is trying to go hurry up, and he's in attack mode, and he thinks there's something they can take advantage of. The defense is starting to get gassed. They're trying to get some personnel in and out, and he's looking at the sideline, and he's trying to get Nagy to kind of get the play in more quickly, or just allow them to go hurry up, and it's not happening. And as he's explaining that to Matt Nagy on the sideline, and they both talked about it a little bit afterwards, Nagy just said, we basically didn't work on some of the scenarios that Foles wanted to do, and there were specific things matchup-wise that we felt strongly about coming into the game that I wanted to make sure we ran. There's a balance for that with Matt Nagy, though, of just because you schemed it during the week doesn't necessarily mean it's the only way you can hurt the opponent during the game. That may have been the case with Mitch at quarterback, because you sort of had to set everything up for him when your offense had schematic success. That's not the case as much with Nick Foles. Nick Foles is better. He's better at psyops, you know, like, right, like psychological operations. He can do that at a much higher level than Mitch can. He still may sail the ball over the head of a receiver who's 5 yards away from him. But as far as just thinking the game at a higher level, you now can take advantage of some things against the opposing defense that you seemingly couldn't with Trubisky behind center or under center. So I think that's that balance Matt Nagy will still need to allow more for within the offense, because you think you have a quarterback who can do it. You need to be able to trust your personnel on the field. If you think your O-line can handle it, your receivers can handle it. If you don't think Anthony Miller can handle it, then get him off the field and put some crew out there who can roll from a mental perspective at the level you really want them to.
Got a texter who's mad at me here saying, Bernstein, you say you don't experiment much when it comes to burgers. You draw the line of peanut butter on a burger. May I remind you, you eat insects. Yeah, I mean,
there is that.
I mean,
there is that.
Okay,
yes.
let me just be clear here for one second. Okay? I am very adventurous when it comes to food, extremely adventurous, and what? I've eaten every kind of bizarre thing possible that's been offered wherever what? I've traveled all over the world. I will what? Always find the street food or something on a menu, whether it's organ meats or brains or insects or anything what? Else. What I'm saying is,
however,
when it comes to cheeseburgers, when it comes to something as iconic as that meal of knowing you're going to get a good burger, you know what's right and you know what you like, and I'll push the boundaries a little bit if it's a when in Rome thing. You know, if you go to Au Cheval, you get it with bacon and a runny fried egg on it because that's their burger. That's what you do. So I would be willing, if it's a, like you say, if it's Lucky 13, it's a specialty place and that's the burger people get there. I could be in that mindset. But if I'm just ordering, I know what I like. And if I want a little bit of grilled onion and American cheese on it, that I know I'm not going to screw it up, and I know I'm going to be happy. And if I do it wrong, I will have wasted the opportunity. So I guess I will try to push my boundaries. If in fact someone says, "Look, we're going to this place, and this is the burger you order there,"
I made the mistake one time of trying shrimp on a slice of pizza over in Italy one time because I'm just thinking, all right, it's Italy, it's pizza. I think this is kind of like technically, they didn't invent pizza over there, but they claim pizza as their own in Italy. So, like, all right, let me try some pizza here in Italy, and this is an exotic slice of pizza. I've never tried any kind of seafood on pizza before. I tried shrimp on some pizza. That was a huge thumbs down. Big well, error in judgment on my part. I got a picture of it.
Not an anchovy guy? You ever had like not the super salty ones, like the European more vinegary white anchovies?
No, no, thank you. Oh, no, so no bueno good. On that one. I mean, again, I'll try it, but it doesn't appeal to me in the least.
And the other thing in Italy is when they put the runny fried egg in the middle of the pizza, and then take the back of the spoon and break that up and spread the egg yolk over everything.
Haven't tried that one. That's good to know.
Yeah,
that's good
to know. With a little bit of slightly crusted around the edges prosciutto on there. Oh yeah, that's the good stuff there. This segment is brought to you by Toro Snowblowers. For grizzly winters, you need a Toro Power Max snowblower. It's a beast on snow. Act now. Get up to $100 off on select Toro Power Max snowblowers. See your Toro retailer now. Win winter with a Toro. Let's talk some defense when we come back, because it generally makes me happier in Bears discussion to talk defense rather than offense. So we're going to get to that. Anthony Heron with us for the full hour on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Well, standard is to be, you know, well, number one across the board, but really just the most dominant defense, you know, on game day. You know, statistics can say certain things, but, you know, each and every week, you just got to be the most dominant team, most dominant defense out there. So, I mean, and again, what, you know, I think we have a lot of special players here and, you know, a great group. And, again, as things start to gel together even more and more, I think, you know, defense can be great and, you know, the offense can be. So anyway, overall, the whole team can, I think, will start getting better. But, you know, this week by week here.
That's Robert Quinn, week by week, be nice for him to play to the contract that they signed. But there's some mystery surrounding that and why he's been at something less than peak effectiveness. But I'm happy to hear him say what he says about holding the defense to that high a standard. A little bit of breaking news here. Breaking news on The Score brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Learn more at Indeed.com/credit. Jim Irsay, the owner of the Colts, is tweeting that the retests of the multiple positives that shut down the Colts facility, the retests have come back clean. They've come back negative. So apparently, at first report, some false positives that provided that scare that shut down the Colts facility. And I would imagine that if they get the all clear, it is wide open. That would be really, really good news. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Golf Mill Ford, Illinois' largest Ford dealer. Beats every deal by at least $500. GolfMillFord.com. Anthony Herron is with us. And this week, tackling is really going to matter. And it's one thing, and I haven't looked at stats that show how many missed tackles the Bears have had, but they stand out for me. It's probably observational bias because I hate them so much and they make me scream. And this is one of these weeks where...
Get him! Tackle!
I hate it. I hate missed tackles, especially at the NFL level. The number of guys that think just putting a shoulder into somebody is sufficient for getting a professional athlete of that quality to fall down, it doesn't happen. And this, you can't miss tackles against this team because you heard Chuck Pagano talking about it. They want you to allow them these yards after the catch and yards after contact.
They're very good at it. They are. There's a lot of shallow crossing routes and just guys dragging across the formation, and Teddy Bridgewater has a pretty quick release. He's looking to get the ball out of his hands in pretty rapid fashion, and when you don't get a pass rush that gets home, then he can do that. And the quickness of the decision-making and the release can make that difficult at times. Now, I think the run-after-catch element of it is intriguing versus this Bears defense because you will see man coverage, you know, not exclusively, but you'll see a good amount of man coverage on the outside between Jalen Johnson and Kyle Fuller. And so when you have corners on the outside whose backs are turned and they're chasing receivers up the field, then when you get a Mike Davis out of the backfield or you get a receiver dragging across and you have the edge of your defense that's maybe chasing someone else up the field, that can lead to big plays. And that's part of what's led to some big plays for the Panthers so far this season. So it'll definitely be incumbent upon Chuck Pagano, incumbent upon the Bears defense to make sure that, I mean, pursuit angles is kind of the blanket term for it, but how do you actually position your defense in a manner that they have eyes in the proper place to be able to pursue? Because, of course, you're much better off coming off of a block and already having an idea of where the ball carrier is or the receiver is versus being in chase mode somewhere else and then perhaps having to react to that late. It's one of the things that the San Francisco 49ers, where I was talking about them earlier, scheming up the run game, scheming up the pass game at times, where they have a great tendency to take advantage of how and where they can dictate the defense's eyes over here and then send a speedy player in the exact opposite direction from where that is, thus making it far more difficult to react. And if you're not reacting well, if you're not reacting on time, then it leads to finger tackles, arm tackles, or just trying to throw your shoulder into someone because you're not in great position to fully wrap up, where the old school tackle, getting your head across the bow, or rugby style tackle, which most teams are starting to specialize in now.
Is that being taught? And if so, why?
It is because the basically just trying to some extent get your head out of the tackle more so than what used to be the case is a part of where the game has gone to in recent years and trying to wrap up the lower body. Now, if you're a defensive back in a bang-bang moment like we saw the Kyle Fuller play against Tampa Bay, then that's a little bit different where you're not necessarily in a position.
Wait, hold on. I'm in reverie again. that sends me to a place, Anthony, because I was compelled to write about it. Like it was like a poet writing an ode to some something beautiful or some muse. When that happened, it was just transcendent. That's one of the great hits in Bears history. That Kyle Fuller hit is, all things considered, about what it, the outcome of the game, about what it meant, about the new rules of the game, the fact that the back judge is like, that has to be a penalty because it was too awesome, and he kind of and he just sort of half-heartedly throws a flag for awesomeness, and then they pick it up. I was moved to write because that was so gorgeous.
Nearly moved to tears is what I almost heard you say there. But that situation is different than where you have a pass receiver or a running back who's already got the ball and you're preparing to engage him at a pursuit angle. So you'll see some of both. You'll see where at that moment of truth where a receiver is catching it and you got that bang, bang moment where a defensive back is coming in, like Kyle Fuller. We've seen Fuller have a couple of those types of moments this season. And that's where it's difficult to try and angle your body in a manner where you can sort of adequately try to wrap and drive and do, you know, some of the things that we've been taught to do since Pop Warner. But when you're actually in a pursuit mode where you're trying to cut off the angle of the ball carrier, keeping your body between he and the end zone, trying to chase them down and taking the proper angle while you're doing that, then it's a different circumstance for your body. It's a different circumstance of pursuit versus a circumstance of immediate impact. And I think for the Bears defense, for Chuck Pagano, then that'll be part of the calculus for them, is finding moments to play man because they like to do it and they're good at it, versus those moments where they say, all right, let's zone up. Let's make sure we got eyes where they need to be in a circumstance that we're expecting some of these shallow crosses, are expecting a screen pass, expecting something that could perhaps gash our defense if we don't have the eyes where they need to be.
It's a question I never asked, and I've been curious about it, especially this year and especially with what practice trends are in the NFL and the lack of hitting. And I could only ask this of a former NFL defensive player. Once you take the field, no matter where you are in your head about that first impact, about the fact that this is live. It isn't pretend live, certainly not a walkthrough, but what, like, the first time you know you are going in and tackling to the ground and somebody is going to stick their knee in your neck as you do it and finishing off or driving into the pile, what happens after that physically and mentally, after that very first impact of the game?
Well, that moment itself is just, it's exhilarating in the manner that, you know, I don't know, some kind of narcotic, I guess, is probably the best way I can assume to describe it. And then in the moment after that, it's also relaxing, because whatever level of nerves, of tension have been built up to that moment, that hyper energy that's there when you're getting ready for the game to begin and you're waiting for that first impact, that first big moment, and you build up to that. And once it's there, then there is a release. There is a moment where you can sort of exhale, try to keep all that same intensity that you can, that same energy, but you can in a way sort of exhale after you get that first one out of your system, because it can be cataclysmic what it does to your body, because there's so much speed and so much force, and you got another large guy running at you with speed and force and mass times speed equaling impact. And then after that initial explosion, then you can sort of get about the business of doing that over and over again for the next 3 hours, which your body has to be able to sustain. But the mental and emotional end of it can be sort of an exhilaration that's, I think it's all, I've never run a marathon, but they talk about that runner's high after the marathon, or after you like finish a marathon show or whatever, where you still, even though you can tell, all right, now that I'm done, now that I'm off the air, now that my job is done, but I've had to be at this kind of emotional peak or this urgency for whatever amount of time I've been doing the job, once that task is over, you still do feel hyped up. And that's still there. You got to be able to maintain that throughout the course of a game. But there is a level of release after that very first play where some of that tension can now leave your body, your mind, your soul, and you can kind of just go about your business from there.
That's why I think now, and we talked to Hub about this, that why returning the opening kickoff, even if you're 8 yards deep in your end zone, why bringing it out is a good bet if you have a guy who might break one. Because obviously with Cordero Patterson, it's a good bet, because
he's very good at it.
He's absolutely he can take it to the house whenever. But first of all, teams don't get to practice it because nobody runs kickoffs out. There's so many that are touchbacks or kneel downs that you can actually take advantage of that. Like, oh, geez, I got to go do this now, right? Rather than pulling up and doing that sort of performative sprint down the field, now you've got to really get after it in a way that maybe if it's the very first play of the game, a team is just not ready, and that everybody on the field hasn't been hit yet, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're full go.
I think that's valid. And it's, again, especially if you have a Cordarrelle Patterson back there who's got the shot to break a long return or just break the soul of somebody in the coverage team because he's going to truck him when he's trying to run the ball back more often than not. And for that moment where it's one thing if you're on the kickoff team, you've been practicing it throughout the entire week. Where, all right, here's the get-off zone. Here's the avoid zone. Here's the attack zone. And when you get to this, you know, line of demarcation, then this is the technique you should be using where you're trying to gain speed initially. And then when you're sort of in the middle of the field somewhere, it's okay to try and avoid the blocker as long as you can get back into what your pursuit lane should be. And then it gets to a point where as you're covering that kick, you need to sort of bear down. And if there is still a blocker between you and the return man, now you have to take that blocker on. It gets to a point where it's too late in the return to avoid a blocker because you may create a crease or a running lane. So now you have to take that blocker on and try to condense whatever return lane might be there. You can coach all those things up you want. Once you do all that and you've been sprinting for 65, 75 yards and you're in position to make a tackle, oh yeah, that guy's running really fast and I'm just coming off the block. Or I'm running really fast too and I got to get myself under control to try and wrap up to make a tackle. So it's one thing to sort of practice that at three-quarter speed throughout the week and you're worried about pulling a hamstring and the coaches are blowing whistles. It is another thing once it is actually live, once that rep counts and you do need to actually try to bring someone to the ground.
One thing we always do on this segment is preview the Bears pass rush against the opposing quarterback. So we'll get into the nitty-gritty of some of that stuff with Anthony Herron when we come back on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Yeah, not only Robert, plus, you know, came back in the middle and the other guys, you know, with Bilal and Roy and 97, you know, coming in, Mario coming in. Mario's very active inside. You know, he's a hard charger and he gives you some good push inside. So with those combinations in there working together, it's opened up some things. And, you know, it's not like you can just, you know, devote all your attention to one dude anymore.
Now, Mario Edwards Jr.'s been pretty good, and he's playing in a way that befits his pedigree as a second-round pick. I asked Kevin Fishbane about it yesterday, and he said that he is somebody to watch. He's not just sort of an overperforming guy, that he's meriting a little bit more attention and certainly is meriting some more snaps right now. Anthony Herron is with us. Get a look at him on Twitch right now, and he's pumping Lucky 13 burger on his T-shirt today. So Teddy Bridgewater, we know, is going to get the ball out. He doesn't have a rocket arm where he's going to be throwing into tight windows down the field or waiting for guys to come open. A lot of it are these kind of balloon routes that will allow guys to run underneath. But almost everything is going to be rhythm and short to medium. What does that mean for your pass rush strategy and how they're still going to be able to get home and try to physically intimidate him because he's so slight?
He's very slight, but he's really tough, man. Like, he is a really, really tough guy. So he'll take big hits. He will get up. He will dust himself off and go back to the huddle over and over again. Now, you know, Tom Brady's really tough too, but you see a pass rush can still affect him. So to your point,
yeah, well, he self-sacks at this point. He's, right, that, yeah. That's the Peyton Manning fainting goat, you know, okay, got me. I'm going to go lie over here.
You're like, wait, Tom, that was me. I'm your teammate. Look at the wrong color jersey here. But for Bridgewater, the pass rush can definitively still affect him too. I mean, he'll take a few sacks here and there, but he's not necessarily a guy you will drastically intimidate, but you can speed up his process. You know, for someone who wants to make decisions quickly, the way that that's most comfortable for a quarterback like Bridgewater is to make decisions quickly within rhythm, within timing. And so, you know, one of the ways to disrupt that, and this goes to the point I was making about Chuck Pagano and I guess that chess match between he and Matt Rhule, is Pagano will like to play some man coverage. You can end up having defensive backs chasing receivers across formations, thus being outflanked by some other receiver running in the opposite direction when you do that. So that can be a difficult thing. Now, the Bears can play zone. I would imagine we'll probably see from a percentage standpoint maybe a little more zone this week than man because of the way that the Carolina offense likes to operate. So for Pagano, You want your defense to be comfortable. You want to see, especially if you get them off after first and second down, into some predictable downs and distances where you will allow them to reroute a receiver, where you will allow some man coverage, thus giving your pass rush that extra beat to fully get home. But the good thing about the Bears' pass rush is that you do have a lot of guys who love sacking the quarterback, but they don't mind power rushing to get there. Akeem Hicks, an outstanding pass power rusher. Khalil Mack, as we've talked about a lot, an outstanding pass rusher, even though he's not this big hulking guy coming off the edge. So I think overall, you're going to be able to see the pocket condense around Teddy Bridgewater. I don't necessarily anticipate a lot of early down sacks, but I anticipate the Bears, if they can get Bridgewater and that Panthers offense into some predictable third downs, then that's where they'll likely cut it loose that much more.
Doesn't sound to me like you are suggesting pressure packages either, because it sounds like you'd rather have your linebackers and safeties patrolling that cluttered middle of the field.
I mean, you want to at least show some things on occasion, but frankly, I don't believe it should be necessary to be able to contain this offense. I mean, I think we'll see a lot of short completions where the Bears need to rally and tackle, and that can be thrown off if you have a Roquan Smith running through the A-gap and, oh, the ball's already gone, so he didn't really do us that much good on that play anyway, and thus we also lose one of our best pursuit tacklers that we have on the field. So I think you won't see as much pressure. If you see more pressure from the Bears, it'll likely be in the second half if Pagano feels like he's gotten a bead on things. When pressure can be called up or dialed up, that he's got a sense for when maybe Bridgewater can be forced to hold the ball a little bit longer. But I don't anticipate much pressure in the first half. I don't anticipate a lot of first and second down sort of craftiness from Chicago, because I think they're going to look at the film of Carolina and believe they have a personnel advantage, thus saying that they don't need to take chances. They need to put themselves in a position to make the plays required and just get the ball back to the offense, or have eyes, zone eyes on the QB, and maybe come up with a takeaway on defense. That's more what I see this game plan likely indicating.
I'm glad you used the word rally to the ball. I actually wrote that right here in my notes. I wrote rally up, because it's something that I don't think we've frankly seen enough of, where a ball carrier or a receiver on one of those short crosses or a little dump off is immediately stopped, and then you can go in and scrape at the ball and try to rip it out of there. Or then that hasn't been a strength of this offense. We might see the colossal hit, but more often than not, we've seen guys squeak for 6 or 7 yards when it should be 3 or 4.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you think back to Mike Brown or Peanut Tillman, you know, some of those guys were Eddie Jackson. The vast majority of his takeaways have been in pass coverage, a lot of times in deeper pass coverage. But for him, a guy who's got such great ball skills, who has such a knack for coming up with them, that's where I think even in Eddie Jackson, who's played really well this season, has been good in run support again, been near some more interceptions and hadn't quite gotten those yet. But aside from just being kind of that center fielder and a guy who runs the alley effectively now, as he's really improved at throughout his career, to find those moments where he goes in as somebody else has the tackle secured and punch it out and rake it away. That's where Eddie Jackson, who isn't, I think there was even maybe a moment earlier this week on social media where he kind of, you know, showed, I don't know if frustration would be the right word, but just kind of noted that he hadn't been targeted in the previous game. So, I mean, that's cool, but find those other opportunities to be the dude that you are. You know, don't let somebody else or wait for somebody else to punch it out and then they toss it to Eddie because he's the great punt returner as a DB. Eddie can be that guy to go in and strip it away, to go in and punch the football out. And he plays, and Kyle Fuller plays with enough presence of mind where these are the types of guys in the secondary where the game is somehow still slow enough for them. Like we've talked about the Fuller hit and you're reveling in it and everything else. But the reason Kyle Fuller can make that hit in a legal manner for where football is right now is because he can play with urgency that's balanced with calm. He can see things as they develop and put his body in a position to make the proper play. Eddie Jackson has that knack as well. So I think those are two players that stand out to me that I would love to see them take that step and do those things you're talking about as far as someone else having the tackle secured. And don't just be satisfied coming in and helping to secure the tackle or to watch someone else take him down to the ground. See if you can get that football raked away. See if you can get the peanut punch in there to create a takeaway for your defense. I think both guys, as far as the magnificent takeaways they've had in their career, have probably been more dependent on doing it via the interception, when I think both of them really have an aptitude where they can come in and create more of those you know, Charles Tillman type takeaways too.
What have you seen from Mario Edwards Jr.?
I like him. I think he's gotten better every game he's been on the field, been more effective. He rushed the quarterback really well against Tampa Bay. I mean, you know, ends up picking up a penalty in there, here or there. But overall, he plays in attack mode, which I like to see. And to have that type of depth where you can feel like we'll put another five technique on the field, and if Akeem Hicks isn't out there, then at least we don't necessarily just lose all that punch to the pass rush. Roy Robertson-Harris has been okay as well. He seemed to be a guy that was emerging early in his career, but it was as a situational player. It was as a guy who you run on the field on third down with all the energy and the verve you can muster, and all right, bring that big frame into the pocket. He was really great at that. Now he's been called upon to do more and more in recent years. I thought maybe this season, before Eddie Goldman opted out, it looked like RRH was going to be able to maybe get back into that more specialized role that he was great at early in his career. Goldman opts out. Nichols has to go to the nose, and now we get a lot more Roy Robertson-Harris, which, again, he's played fine, but he's not consistently affecting the pocket as he looked like a guy who could do before. But it's a nice rotation. It's nice to have a Mario Edwards be able to come in that role also. It's just, we'll see. At whatever point John Jenkins is able to come back and give you more girth at the nose, and I think the entire front and the entire run defense will end up benefiting from that, as long as Jenkins has, you know, the use of both hands to really hit blocks on the interior. Because I see a lot of things within the Bears' run defense that I think have been improving around that. Like, I think Akeem Hicks is in great shape, and he's playing much better now than he did week one. Danny Trevathan has gotten better every single week. You still don't have Hercules on the inside. You still don't have that brick that can be, that's immovable, that object on the inside of the defense that will really aid the Bears run D at some point.
Hercules, Hercules, Hercules. I think when you mention Robertson-Harris and his height, now if I'm picturing the game in my mind's eye, this could be one of those two where your big play is an interception off a batted pass, because it's the internal clock on this rush, right? It's like push, 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 hands up, be tall, disrupt. And especially if it's in these rhythm passing games where he's looking for throwing lanes and looking to get it out or throw it to Mike Davis, that it's, especially as you say, in a single block going off your bull rush, then it's just going to know internally when to get those hands in the air.
It's one of the reasons the Bears defense has been amongst the best throughout the entire season for like opposing QB rating, for completion percentage of the opposing quarterback, because not only is the pass rush able to get home, and we've seen them get home even more the last couple of weeks, but even early in the season when the sack totals weren't there, they were affecting the pocket. They were condensing throwing windows, and where quarterback may not feel the brunt of the physical pressure if someone's not busting him in the chops, hitting him in the sternum, as all D linemen would like to do, but you can still condense the throwing window, just make the vision of the quarterback more difficult to actually see the window he wants to deliver the ball through. When he doesn't have that, the pass is far more likely to be errant. He'll be less accurate because he just can't have that clear picture of where he'd like to throw. And the Bears defense, this front, has always been great with this core group that's in place here, and having a group rush mentality where you got guys who are willing to rush with power, they're willing to condense the pocket, but when it's time to freelance, when it's time to go get it, when it's time to win with some finesse moves, they can do that as well. So that versatility, the way that they can both condense the pocket and penetrate the pocket, is something that not all D-lines can do.
That is your Bears Friday pre-Bears Hour with Anthony Herron that we do from 10 to 11. And you can listen to Anthony Herron and Olin Krutz on the post-post game show on Sunday. Anthony, fun as always. Thank you.
Daniel, appreciate you, my friend.
The top of the hour is brought to you by Golf Mill Ford, Illinois' largest Ford dealer. Beats every deal by at least $500. GolfMillFord.com. Sadly, Matt Miller had to cancel on us. Look forward to having him back on the schedule as soon as we can. But I want to get back, as I mentioned, to the situation with Robert Quinn. Hearing from him and then hearing what Bears coaches say about him and trying to unravel the mystery of why he has had less than the desired impact. That's coming up after a brief timeout on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.